We've been working through a series that I've called Jesus and we've looked at family in a couple of ways, and recently we looked at Jesus and his family, and today I want to take a look at what he has to say to the 21st century. As I read my Bible, I don't see anywhere where there's a shout out to 21st century Christians. When I read Mark, and I think personally that if one of the gospel writers was going to record that, it would have been Mark, just because of the way he writes. But I do think that the things that Jesus says to the people of his day and the families of his day apply equally well to us. So when I started to look at this, I did some Googling. I Googled modern family and realized that that was a mistake, because the first thing and the only thing you seem to get is about a sitcom that's been resurrected a couple of times. But what does the 21st century family look like? It consists of blended families. It consists of single-parent families. It consists of what we think of as traditional families. It consists of extended families. But Solomon was right when he said that things don't really change, that people are still the same inside. After all, Jesus had a discussion with a woman who'd had five husbands and was living with someone who wasn't her husband. The fact is, to put our finger on a 21st century family is very difficult. Every family is different. And every family that we look at is a representation of what that particular group thinks their family should be like. But what is the family for anyway? Let's start with the fact that the family was God's idea. He put the family in place back in the book of Genesis. He put it in place to protect the young. He put it in place to nurture children and bring them up to know him. He put it in place to give comfort and care to the elderly. Yesterday I was in Meaford to attend the funeral of Jim Ford, and there was a lot of people there. The impact that he had, a rather simple man who was a farmer and a carpenter, can be seen through his family and the people who appreciated that. Without making or trying to make anyone feel uncomfortable who maybe has been married but doesn't have children, I think one of the things that God provided for those who are somewhere between the children and the elderly is the greatest adventure of their entire lifetime. There's nothing that I've experienced quite like the elation and responsibility of holding my newborn child. In that moment, you realize that this slippery little mass in your hands is a gift of God that he's given you care over, that decisions you're going to make and the love you show that child will shape and guide them for their life. I think it's the most rewarding and simultaneously challenging thing you can ever do, being a parent. But why did God set up the family? I think the answer lies in the fact that God created us in his image. He had within himself the perfection of a relationship of three in one. And we sang that song this morning about the Trinity. When he created us, he wanted to mimic that same bonding. He wanted us to feel the same kind of unbreakable intimacy and love that he had. And so a man and a woman leave their own families to set up a new family. And if they're blessed with children, to extend that same love to a new being in exactly the same way that God extends his love to us as our children. And we talked about that a little bit in our class this morning. If God set up family, then it makes sense that Jesus has things to say about what the family should be like. And today I want to take a look at that, and I want to take a look at it in the area of honoring. If we're to build a godlike family, I think honor is one of the most important ideas. This morning in the reading, Mark chapter 10, verses 18 through 20. "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments." And your version was a little different than mine. Mine starts with murder. "You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony, you shall not defraud. Honor your father and mother." Jesus had been asked a question: what must I do to inherit eternal life? But I think that's the wrong question. It's not about what you do, it's about who you are. And so Jesus goes back to first principles. He knew who this man was. He says, "You know the commandments." He understood that this man knew what was right. Even before the man makes a claim that he had kept all these since he was a boy, because Jesus is the power through which God created us. He knows us inside and out. But he also knew of this man that head knowledge was not enough to change his actions. His inner guidance was driven not by love, but by duty. Duty to a system that he thought, if he could just do the right things, would bring him eternal life. And how sad that is for that man. And so Jesus lists some of the commandments. You know what they are. And we might think that they go from the greater to the lesser. Murder is universally considered a heinous crime. But honor your father and mother seem like lightweights by comparison. In reality, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount that if you're angry with someone, you're in danger of the exact same kind of judgment as those who murder. The man who dishonors his parents is showing the exact same kind of spite that humans show for God when they reject him. And contempt is a very insidious thing, and it can ruin us inside. It's more detrimental to us than the parents that we're not showing the appropriate esteem to. Jesus considers not honoring your father and mother such a serious offense because it exactly parallels the reproach that humankind has shown for God. I consider that reproach is the opposite of honor. From the garden until now, humankind has rejected God's counsel, his advice, and his friendship. When I want to figure out why my car isn't working right, I take it back to the manufacturer. When I don't remember the coverage on my insurance policy, I open it up and look to see what it is. But so often we fail to turn back to our maker when we don't know what's going wrong with us. The psalmist laments that those who've stood against God, "Remember how the enemy has mocked you, Lord, how foolish people have reviled your name." And Isaiah says, "Therefore, as tongues of fire lick up straw and as dry grass sinks down in the flames, so their roots will decay and their flowers blow away like dust, for they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty and spurned the Holy One of Israel." If we're not honoring our parents, we're doing exactly the same thing to them that the nation of Israel, that all people who've not decided to follow God, have done to him. Paul sums up how important it is by saying, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and you may enjoy long life on the earth." We like to tell our children, "Act your age." be more mature. But that's not what Jesus says. Will pointed it out in class this morning. Jesus says the kingdom belongs to those who, like children, are able to fully trust and honor God. That's why he calls us to honor our parents, because it's a learning on how we can learn to honor him. And in just the same way that Jesus calls us to honor our parents, he calls us to honor our spouse. Earlier I said that the parent-child relationship may be the most intimate and important relationship in your life. But certainly marriage has got to be right up there as almost equally important. If we learn about love from our parents, we learn to give love through our spouses. It's fundamentally right to honor parents. It's fundamentally right to honor our spouse. Matthew chapter 19, if you want to turn there. Large crowds followed him, this beginning in verse 2, and he healed them there. Some Pharisees came to test him. They asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason?" "Haven't you read," he replied, "that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate.'" Matthew lets us know that yet again, this question is more about trapping Jesus, looking for a way to accuse or undermine him than to really get at truth. The question the man begins with is it lawful to divorce a wife? Some translations, including the one that I read, the NIV, add for a man or for a husband. That's actually a little bit of interpretation of the manuscripts. The majority don't have that word. They just say, is it lawful to divorce a wife? I don't know if in our modern 21st century in families, we should be reading it more about, or reading it that way, without the husband or the man. After all, in Canada, it's legal for marriage of wife to wife. Why only is it a wife? Is it lawful to divorce a wife? Under Gentile law, it was permissible for a woman to divorce a man. But under Jewish law, only the man had that right. This double standard was not lost on Jesus. He refuses to debate the misconduct of a woman. And the resulting divorce. The Pharisees' questions had said, for any and every reason, in the NIV, as a source of divorce. Do you suppose that they may have been trying to put Jesus in the same opposition to Herod that John had been in? If you remember, he opposed Herod because of his illegitimate marriage. And in John's case, that opposition led to his execution. Wouldn't it suit the Pharisees' aim to watch Jesus taken out of the picture by Herod so they wouldn't have to get their hands dirty in seeing that he was no longer around? Instead, Jesus takes the discussion to an entirely new level. "Haven't you read? They were created male and female, and their union would establish one new unit entity, not two, but one." The word Jesus used can be translated glued, or bonded, or cemented. Remember back to the garden? It was not right that Adam, alone of all living creatures, did not have someone as his partner and his equal. And so a perfectly suited companion was created, not from something new, but from his own person. Taken from Adam, both male and female were now incomplete in a way that only the marriage union could restore. Have you ever watched or listened to your spouse and thought, that's right, that's just how I feel? And then you remember, that's why I married this person. They complete me in a way that no one else does. Jesus says this is because in marriage, they've been joined back together, welded, if you like, by God into a kind of union that recalls the relationship of the Trinity. Our two hands are similar to each other, but not exactly the same. In fact, they're opposites, but they complement each other and are suited to each other. Working together, they are stronger. That's a quote from a woman named Linda K. Burton. Reading on in Matthew. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. The disciples said to him, If this is the situation between a husband and wife, it is better not to marry. Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. This bond that God made is sacred in his eyes. Jesus says, no one has the right to break it. Not an outsider, and not even one of the two participants in the marriage. And the Pharisees, they come back with, well, why is it that Moses told us to get a certificate and validate this divorce and give them a right to move on? And again, Jesus corrects their duplicity. Moses permitted it. He didn't command it. And it was because of you and your hard hearts. This is not what God had intended. You want to marry another, a newer, shinier model. Is life any different in the 21st century? We have what we like to call serial monogamy, people moving from one partner to another, hoping to find happiness. But Jesus wants us to understand that God ordained one man and one woman for life, with each spouse going out of their way to serve each other in the best way they can. That's the way to completeness that's modeled in heaven. The Spirit and the Son both give themselves to the Father, who completes the circle by honoring them with grace and power. Jesus says, show your honor for your spouse by living in harmony with the vow you took to live united with that person for life. As children, we honor our parents in gratitude for what they give us. As spouses, we honor each other by committing to the marriage, the new one that was created out of the two that is more important than either of us as individuals. Finally, Jesus says, your family and your worship is only real when you honor God above all else. Matthew chapter 15, beginning in verse 15. Then some Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat. Jesus replied, and why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that which might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, they are not to honor their father or mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites! Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. Jesus is accused of breaking tradition. His disciples are not performing the ritual washings. Not a command of God, but a practice of men. He fires right back. He feels no need to respond to them on their level again, and instead points to their supported practice called Korban. In older Bibles, it's often just transliterated. It means given over to God, as the New International tries to interpret. It was a solemn pledge to devote something to God such that it was set apart and could not be used for anything else. And the sad truth is it was being used to dishonor parents. Though they might be in need, anything that was declared as Korban could not be used to help them. This was using a vow to God to override the need of the parents, and Jesus condemns it with force. In fact, this is the first time that Jesus is recorded as calling them out as hypocrites. Jesus does ask us to devote something irrevocably to him, but it's our lives. Mark chapter 12. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given a good answer, he asked them, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." Mark chapter 12, verse 30. So, three things we've looked at today about honor. Children, where'd they go? They're downstairs already. Honor your parents because they know what is best for you. Young adults, we have a few of those here. Honor your parents because they continue to love you as they always have and pray for you. Aged people, honor your parents for the heritage they have given you and entrusted you to pass on to others. And yesterday's funeral was a testament to a man who lived that out. Young husbands and wives, honor each other because that builds intimacy and completes you with your spouse. Parents, honor each other because of the impact it will have on your children. Golden age couples, honor each other out of gratitude for the gift of another of their entire life. Young people, honor God for the future he has given you. Grown-ups, honor God for his unfailing love day after day. Elderly, honor God as you come closer to the day when you will be judged to be with God or opposed to him. The message today is pretty simple. It hasn't changed since Jesus' day. We've been rebellious, but he calls us back to himself. He's washed everything away. He asks that we honor our God. We honor each other, specifically in the family. We honor our parents, and we honor our spouses. Then we can truly honor God.